Hi, my guest now is Billy Hollis. Billy, thanks for coming up and joining me.
Oh, pleasure,
on
Robert.
The Channel 9 stage here. We are at TechEd Orlando.
2012.
Have you been having a good show so far?
I have. I've done two sessions here, both on design-oriented concepts, and that's a new thing for TechEd to pump up the amount of design-oriented content as we kind of move into the next generation of applications.
We have this, these Windows 8 apps, and we need to make them designed according to the Metro principles.
And you need to make them compelling, interesting.
Not just make an app that looks like a Metro app, but an app that actually follows the design principles.
That's right.
It can be actually kind of tricky.
It is. Well, you have to get inside the user's head to a certain point and understand what they're going to feel when they see that application, whether it's going to correspond to their workflow. But the nice thing about it is, in my experience in doing the design things, when you find it, the users will tell you. Mm-hmm. They will say, now that fits. And they get the level of enthusiasm when you truly meet the user's needs with a good design. It is through the roof compared to your normal relationship with the user.
Right. So you've done a lot of design work in XAML for WPF and Silverlight. You're obviously very famous for that. How do you find the designs you were able to make in sort of the current crop of apps compared to the designs you'll be able to do or compelled to do in Windows 8 apps? Was it seamless? Was it difficult to pick up?
Well, I wouldn't call it seamless, but you do get to carry forward quite a bit of the expertise. When you get into the XAML world, the thing that most people struggle with is what we call the composition model, how things fit together to do interesting designs. We're accustomed to UI stacks where you drag some big control over on the surface. Yeah. And so you're working in big chunks of functionality in some of the older UI stacks. XAML's not like that. XAML is smaller pieces that have more restricted kinds of functionality, but then the combinatorics give you enormous flexibility. So
the what?
The combinatorics.
Combinatorics.
Sorry. I'm a math guy, right? So
okay.
Combinatorics. All the possible combinations that you can put together.
Okay.
I still think, in the shower, gosh, if I put this piece together with that, I could. So that's part of adapting to the XAML world, is getting your mind wrapped around that composition model and the layout model that goes with it. And that goes over pretty much seamlessly to the Windows 8 XAML world. It has the same basic layout and composition model. So that was the hard part in learning XAML. That part you don't have to replicate when you go to Windows 8 XAML. Now, there are various other holds, but that part goes with you.
Do you find that an app that you design for Windows 8 will look significantly different than an app that you would design for Silverlight?
In general, a Windows 8 app, there's a fairly prescriptive set of design guidelines for Windows 8 that Silverlight did not have. So if you're going to make your app fit into the consistency that with the other applications that are going to be there, then it is going to look pretty different.
Okay.
I don't think that people should feel that they have to make everything they do in Windows 8 just a collection of rectangles that goes around. I think that in many cases you can use the Metro style as a launch pad, and then there are other parts of your app that implement other interaction patterns. I don't really think that falls outside the Metro design guidelines, but certainly the entry point for the app is going to look different than it does.
Right. So when you say the rectangles, you're talking about
the tiles.
The canonical example, you look at a lot of the newsreaders app, the MSNBC app, the USA Today app, the sort of the photo app where you come in and there's a grid of tiles. Mm-hmm. You scroll backwards and forwards to find the one you want. And in Visual Studio, if you create a Metro app using the grid or split app project templates, you get
that's
that.
What you're going to get right out of the box.
Which is sort of the, it's a Metro app, it adheres to the Metro design principles, and it's a familiar pattern, but you're saying you don't have to be wedded to that.
That's right. There are parts of the interaction for your app that you're going to want to try to use that pattern. You push that pattern to the point where you realize, gosh, let's say that I was doing an application. This was an example for my session today. Suppose I'm doing a conference application like TechEd. Well, sure, I could do blocks for the sessions, well, why would I want to do that? A timeline makes a lot more sense
sure.
from a user interaction pattern, because then mm-hmm. visually the things are laid out in the way that the person's going to think. So you do want to use those prescriptive guidelines, and especially for things like colors and control templates. In the XAML world of WPF and Silverlight, we always reskinned our controls, always. The built-in default skins just didn't reach the level of cosmetic attractiveness that we wanted, but there's a lot less need to reskin the Metro controls
mm-hmm. okay.
because the built-in, what's called control templates in
right.
the XAML world, the built-in ones, I get the idea they've invested quite a bit more design
Clearly.
Effort in getting
yeah.
those right.
So that's
one thing you don't have to worry about nearly as much as WPF.
Right. The fact that you can start with the grid app or the split app template and create the app, press F5, and it's a working, running, Metro-style
yeah.
app that looks like a Metro-style app.
With some fudged up data. And
yeah.
Which is
not that hard to swap out for real live data, it turns out.
It's not too bad.
Yeah.
There's enough moving parts that it'll take people a couple hours of looking at it and getting a feel for how the parts fit together
yes.
in the built-in templates. And I'm hoping and expecting that those mm-hmm. won't be the only templates we see. Those are the starter templates, but we'll see some more interaction patterns for templates
yeah.
come along their designers crank out.
And you can certainly create some and put them on the Visual Studio Gallery
yeah.
and give people some additional ones.
So I'm hoping we'll see
right.
more of that as time goes on.
I'm
yeah.
hoping that you'll write a couple.
Well, in my voluminous spare time.
Of course. So for somebody moving over from XAML and Silverlight or WPF to XAML in Windows 8 apps, we talk about leverage your skills, reuse your existing knowledge. So if someone came up to you and said, okay, I know what Microsoft says, but what do you really think? Can I do that? How much of what I already know can I reuse? What would you tell them?
Well, what you know that you can reuse is fairly substantial. There are holes. This is a 1.0 product. So there are places where an advanced XAML programmer, just to kind of pick an example out of the bucket, an advanced XAML programmer is accustomed to using data binding in styles.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some respects that lets you tie certain styles together. You have a chain of things and you have a central point where you can change something that kind of ripples through a whole set of styles. We can't do that in 1.0 XAML in the Metro world. We don't have behaviors, which is a common frameworky
okay.
capability. All of those things can be overcome. And this reminds me a little bit.
Let's wait for her to finish. Okay. As I said, we're here at Tech Ed.
Yes.
So we got 15 minutes until they kick us out of the expo hall.
It reminds me a little bit of the early versions of Silverlight, Silverlight 2 in particular. You would go over there and you'd start to do something if you came from the WPF world, and you'd start, and it just wasn't there yet. So now it doesn't mean you can't get that functionality, but now your responsibility for filling that hole
mm-hmm.
in is a little higher. And we're
right.
seeing some of the same things here. And it's, to be honest, it's a little bit past where Silverlight 2 was in terms
mm-hmm.
of the number of holes. So it's not quite so many things that you have to worry about. But definitely you have to expect some extra time. You certainly should not expect to merely take your XAML from Silverlight or WPF and just paste it in.
Sure.
Your chances of making that work are slim. I have actually taken modest size segments, data templates, for example. If I looked at a simple data template for a list box or a list view or something, I've had cases where I just took that data template, stuck it in Windows 8, it worked just like that and didn't
okay.
need any changes. So there are such situations, but you shouldn't count on that.
Right. And so when you start out with file new project, you build a Metro style app, and then you go and look at the XAML that Visual Studio creates. And if you go and look at the styles that are in the standard styles, XAML file and whatnot, how much of that did you immediately recognize, and how much did you say, oh, that's brand new, I wonder what they're doing there?
You immediately recognize quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
It's the containers that seem, the flip view, for example,
okay.
the new elements, and you look at that and go, well, what does that do? And
right.
then there are a few things that are missing. So there's the grid view that it, in essence, kind of replaces the wrap panel.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little bit of adaptation there. Some of your old friends are there, grid and stack panel and things like that. So you see that and you go, yeah, I know exactly what that does. But then you see a few new containers and you need to learn something about how their layout works. But I didn't find that to be difficult. And the way they set up the styles wasn't too hard to get. The data pipeline was probably a little more complex than some people are used to, but in the templates, but it was decipherable. But yeah, certainly that when I looked at the XAML, I could kind of figure out what it was doing from my years of experience in WPF without too much trouble.
Right. What about the navigation framework, which seems to have evolved a little from consumer preview to release preview?
Yeah, the navigation framework takes a little bit because that's probably one of the bigger changes where in Silverlight or WPF, I would have just instantiated a view and put it in whatever host container I wanted it in. You really shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. In the Windows 8 XAML world, you need to explicitly call navigate commands, and that feels a little weird, but there are people who have done Silverlight apps a lot like that. So they will, if you've used the navigation framework in Silverlight, the feel of it is kind of the same, that you're using a navigate method to bring up a new screen element instead of newing it up and putting it in a host.
Right.
So it won't be outrageous even for somebody that hasn't done that before. That concept is a little bit different though.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to design, I found that, you know, one of the issues that I had building an app, I built an expense reporting application that I used in my talk today. And it gives you the ability to create a new expense report based on existing outstanding mm-hmm. charges, and then add those charges to a report, enter new charges, and then save it, submit it to your manager. Your manager can come in and approve or reject expense reports. So it's relatively basic functionality. It works with a WCF service that talks to SQL Server data. And I found as I was building the code and the XAML that the vast majority of it felt pretty familiar. The thing that I struggled the most with, I think, was the design and where to put the buttons. You know, do they go in the app bar? Which of the buttons go on the canvas? And
well, that's just it for line of business apps.
Yeah.
You've got operations that have to be readily accessible. You typically see, because you've got the swipe from the bottom to get application-specific things. Things that you don't use very often naturally go there, but if I'm just kind of approving expense reports, I don't want to be doing that. And I'm not sure that the Metro guidelines really tell us at this point what we should be doing in that area.
Yeah, what I actually came away with after working with a design firm who had some experience on this was that you move more towards getting those buttons off the canvas and putting them in the app bar. And if you looked at the release preview versions of some of the readers, like the MSNBC reader, for example, you come in, you look at an article, and there are no buttons. The back button's not even there until you swipe.
Yeah.
And the thinking is that you come in, you know, you're holding the tablet like this. It's really easy to
swipe
go from one to the other. It's really easy to swipe up, and there's the back button. And when you come in to read an article, that's all you see, right? It's the ultimate content over Chrome, with the Chrome being easy to get to.
And I'm certainly willing to believe that that's viable for consumption-based content apps. When we start to get into interaction patterns, for where people are actually doing work with the thing, I think we're going to see a little bit of evolution there over time.
Yeah.
There will eventually be, from trial and error, some guidelines that say it's a good idea to put things in the app bar under these conditions and maybe move up to have a more interactive screen element under these conditions.
Yeah.
I certainly understand the Chromeless feel, because when you're in this immersive experience of touch, you want less clutter. You really don't want to have to be avoiding things that are on the screen as you touch. You
right.
don't want to go for a swipe and accidentally hit a button. That's and I think a lot of people don't even get why you're trying to get those elements off to a place where you clearly and obviously have to, of your volition, ask for them before you
right.
see them. So that's what the design thinkers in Metro we're thinking about, and I completely understand why
they
work.
And I found that over time, as I work more with that, I'm becoming more sold on the idea of when you come into a page that you're scanning and then the buttons are easily available. Yeah. If you got your hand on the mouse, it's a simple right click and there they are.
Yeah.
How hard is that, right? Or if you're holding the tablet, it's a simple swipe up and there they are. They're so easy to get to that, you know, it almost, it's actually now starting to feel more natural and more second nature to me, which is a bit of a big 180 over like where I was 2 weeks ago.
Well, but from my own perspective, I'm so early in the process of trying. I haven't done a real production app in Windows 8 yet.
Right.
Just some trial things. So I tend to reserve judgment. That's the real apps are what tells me how far I can push a particular design suggestion. And my own guideline tends to be, certainly the consistency has value in and of itself. And the designers spend a lot of time thinking about some things. But when I get to a point where the experience for my users is far enough off the standard path, then I'm going to try some things. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily say I'm going to just completely divorce myself from the standards going in. But as we get into more complex interaction scenarios that aren't fundamentally content and consumption based, then I think we're going to need to do a little bit of experimentation to find exactly where we should push the borders.
Okay, I think we have time for one last question, and that would be if somebody comes to you and says, okay, I've heard about building Windows 8 apps, you know, I understand that I can reuse a lot of my skills, that I like that, but how do I decide when to build an app as a Windows 8 app as opposed to a desktop app? How do I know which of my existing desktop apps I should move over to Windows 8 apps? What would you tell people as general guidelines?
Well, I do a lot of work in healthcare, and I also consult in various other kinds of companies. And it's pretty clear that the average American business has a fraction of their development that would profit from going to the mobile platform right away. I think 3 out of 4 businesses have a piece where they could get a better experience for their users and raise productivity. And for a lot of companies, this world is so different for them that that's probably their first foray into it, is to find that thing where there's a very, very high value add inside the company for the touch-centric slate form factor. And that puts off the decision for exactly when you try to convert desktop things. Now, desktop things, some of them are obviously better candidates than others. Desktop things that can be decomposed into smaller pieces are better candidates for trying to work into the Metro paradigm. When you look at a desktop app that requires you to have a visual surface and properties that you're going to set and things like that, that's at the high end. That's your users that are specialists in what they do and need a wide array of flexibility. I don't know how Metro will evolve to handle things like that, but you don't want to be looking at doing those right away.
Right.
But if you've got, dashboards. Dashboards are a good business thing where you can decompose the pieces down pretty naturally and they fit into the Metro sort of way of looking at things pretty well. So yeah, the mobile is first, and then the next thing I'd suggest is look at the decomposability of the app.
Yep. Do you find that a Metro app with touch first and the fluidity, the ability to have live tiles that are telling you information and the contract, search and share, do you find that can make an app more productive than the desktop version of the same app?
Well, it depends on the app.
Yes,
see,
I know you are,
but see, that's just it. Whenever you ask
a leading question,
whenever you ask an expert, it's always it depends.
Yeah,
because the expert wants to then go into the details and get involved in the particular cases, but it does depend, because live tiles in particular can certainly refresh information for you. On the other hand, when I first installed Windows 8 and the mail app came up and it used my live ID and I've got 2 mail messages and I'm doing things and those two mail messages keep, okay, fine, I've got 2 mail messages.
Yeah.
Don't keep distracting me with the same 2 mail messages over and over again. So live tiles, I think there's still some development there for how you strike the right balance between telling people things that you'd like them to know versus just getting them out of the corner of the eye that distracts them. When I got my Windows phone, which, by the way, I love, it's the nicest phone I've ever had. I've had it for 15 months. But that people thing, that thing is off my main screen because I find it distracting. So I don't think everybody is going to like lots of live tiles. My advice on live tiles is, what pieces of information are important to you?
Yeah.
And keep it down to that. And what I'm afraid is that we're going to see a lot of vendors that go, well, my information is the most important thing in the world, and when I install, I'm putting a live tile in there. And before you know it, you've got a bunch of them. That's going, from a design perspective, that's going to produce visual animated clutter, and I think people are going to need to be careful about that.
Great. All right. Thanks. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Good to see you.
Robert, always a pleasure.
All right. We'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.